Hello, we're finally here. It's been a long time in the making, months and months, but I'm Georgie.
No, I'm Rachel.
All things to do with film, mostly to wind people up and annoy them, but also because we feel them deep in our soul.
Oh, 100%.
100%, yeah. So today, obviously, it's just the introduction so you can get a little bit of a feel about what the rest of this podcast is going to be about and our likes and dislikes, so you can see if you align with our tastes, shall we say. So today, basically, we're going to be talking about our least favourite films and our least favourite tropes in film. But we don't want to be too negative, so we'll probably throw in some of our favourite films too.
Only maybe.
Maybe, yeah. If we have time. Maybe not. Who knows? And we were saying this has been hard to narrow down or to pin down our least favourite films, right?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's either been just too many that it's like, I physically cannot talk about all of these, or like, oh, there are films that I actually dislike enough to put in a bottom instead of just like a general like, ah, I don't want to rewatch that.
This is it. Like, there's some that I was like, I don't like that film, but do I actively hate that film?
Exactly.
You know? Like, it was like a big thing.
Yeah.
I think I've just about, mine are quite nebulous. So like, but you'll see what I mean. But you had trouble kind of nailing firm hate, didn't you?
Yeah, I mean, yeah, I'm excited to see what you hate.
Yeah, I mean, you know a lot of what I hate, Amber. So we're going to go through our three least favourite films first of all. So these aren't ones that we just don't like, and these are ones that we really, 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 really don't like.
Yeah.
You want to go first?
I'll let you take it away.
Okay. My number one, and it was the one that kind of came to my head immediately, first of all, so I know that it's a good contender, is Super, the 2010 film with Elliot Page and Rowan Wilson.
Okay.
I hated it. And I think I hated it because I was completely missold the film, I think, in the first place. So,
right.
If you've not seen it, it's kind of, if Kick-Ass was bad, no, that's harsh, but it's it's about superheroes and people who are obsessed with superheroes and who want to become superheroes. And it is very Kick-Ass, and like, you kind of hang around comic book stores, and they kind of take on this persona. And it's Rowan Wilson who does this in the first instance because of a situation that happened with his wife. And I think, like, the person who recommended it to me said that it was like a funny super, like Kick-Ass, like a funny superhero wannabe film.
Mm.
No. It was a lot more graphic than I anticipated.
Right.
And Elliot Page's character is very, very, very questionable in it and does some things that I can't get on board with.
Oh.
Yeah. Which is, on one hand, interesting to see that from another perspective. I'm trying to be vague.
Sure.
Yeah, but also, no, it's one of those films that I struggled watching it, and I know I will never watch it again. So that was, like, my first one.
Sure.
I think maybe because I was told it was, like, a funny superhero film, and it wasn't. Even Nathan Fillion couldn't save it.
Ooh.
So, yeah, that's my top spot.
Okay.
What is yours?
Like, I literally have zero written down under this title in my notebook. but the one thing that I feel as though I watched, it was, like, probably about a year ago now, was No Country for Old Men. Like, that film. Yeah. Like, I'm not a fan of action films in general. I like a good cat and mouse. That's fine. But what happened in that film, you know? Like, there was some walking.
Yeah.
And then there was some air canisters.
Yeah.
And then there was some more walking. Maybe a smash window along the way. Like, what did I get out of that film? Not a lot.
No.
And I know, like, I watched that over like a voice chat with a bunch of friends. And they were like, oh, this is so sick. Like, oh, it's a cult classic. I'm like, okay, yeah, I'll give this a go. Because my taste is just horror films, apparently. Until very recently, to be fair. So that's kind of where I'm based in all this viewing. But that was not the one.
No.
And I don't wish to rewatch that.
Ever.
No. Unless we do an episode on it, which I'll elaborate, but do I actually want to rewatch it?
No. Yeah, it is one of those films, isn't it? You watch it at the end, you're like, I'm not gonna get that time back.
Yeah. And then my mates were just like, oh yeah, so it's so great because it's like away from the actual action and like you don't need to see it all, like, oh, the big like mafia shootout kind of type style scene. You're not there. You're in like the back with the other people, seeing what's going on there. Like, okay, yep.
You need something compelling though. Sure, yeah.
Yeah.
That's fair. Mm. That actually ties in very neatly to one that I was going to mention, but didn't know if I would include. But you explained that so perfectly. I can't not now.
Okay.
The Revenant.
Oh, okay.
Like, don't get me wrong. I am a sucker for a beautiful landscape and gorgeous vistas and Tom Hardy. But no, it was, oh my God, no. The bear was cool. And then it was, like, I'm sorry if this makes me sound artless, but it was just, I just didn't like it. And it was a crime that out of all of the films that man has been in, that was what he got the Oscar for.
Sure.
You know?
Okay.
I thought it was mind-numbing. I thought it was really dull. Mm. I didn't care about his character. I couldn't understand a word Tom Hardy was saying with a weird accent. And I get it. I get it. I think it's just like Bear Grylls the film, literally. It's a hard pass for me. Okay. And it was so long. Oh my God. It was so long. Yeah. You sound like you like that film.
I haven't seen it.
Okay, don't.
Okay. There are a lot of films that I feel like you're going to end up talking about that I just haven't seen. And that's fine.
I feel like that could be definitely the case with you as well, though, which is good because we can then have a cultural exchange of things we hate even more.
So. Now that's just a constant with us anyway.
To be fair, that is very true. So yeah, I think that one's snuck its way in just because it really, really correlates with why you did not like No Country for Old Men.
Sure. No, absolutely. Yeah. I get that.
Yeah. And I'm angry now having spoken about it, which shows that it deserves its place.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Right.
Yeah.
What about you? You're next.
So I tried doing 31 Days of Horror in October. This is just like a little fun thing. Didn't make it through. Work and life, you know how it is. But the film I watched on the second day was called Caliber.
Okay. There's no visuals on this, listener, but if you could see her face right now, it would be a picture.
It is. That film, if I wanted what felt like 40 minutes out of a 2-hour film of just still images of Scotland... I would just go onto a Google Chrome waiting screen.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. I remember you telling me about this now you said that, actually.
Yeah. So, like, for the first, like, couple, I was like, oh, this is really nice. It's so pretty. Like, wow. It's nice. And then it happened again. I was like, wow. There is literally no movement in this. Why is it still going? And it's been 30 seconds. Help.
Yeah.
And then it happened again and again. And again, and then the credits rolled. So, and the story as well was like, I wish that this kind of moral dilemma thing was approached differently because it was an okay concept. Like, I could have gotten on board with it. Towards the end, it got, I want to say, intense, but it didn't quite make it. But then the rest of the film was just like a buildup of people talking, which I don't mind. Conversational films, great. Hateful Eight. Love that film. It's a great film. This was just a bunch of people in a Scottish pub finding things out in a really boring way. And then they were just in a barn and there was a choice and then the film ended. And I felt very disappointed because I was really looking forward to that film, but it did not live up to what it said on the tin.
Yeah, it does not sound compelling.
Wouldn't recommend it.
No.
And it's like, it's quite long for what it is.
Mm.
Like, I couldn't tell you a minute count or anything, but it felt like Titanic.
Okay, yeah.
I know it wasn't 3 hours, but it was a lot, you know?
Yeah. Fair enough. So, my final one, and it was difficult because there's a lot. Like I said, it was a balance between things that I just really don't like and stuff I actively really, really hate, you know?
Sure.
So, it was a toss-up between... And this one's going to get me so much shit. I know it is. And I'm sure we will do an episode on it at some point.
Okay.
I think we've actually already got it penciled in. Blade Runner 2049.
Okay, yep.
But we'll shelve that for now because it's been beaten out by something that I hate more.
Mm-hmm.
A Serbian film.
Ooh!
And this was my nebulous concept in terms of a Serbian film and films like it.
Okay, yep.
You know, doesn't need to exist. Any Saw film past the first one doesn't need to exist. Like, the first one, really cool concept.
Yeah,
the rest,
yeah.
Why are you still doing this?
Okay.
And stuff like, it's like the whole, that kind of, I love horror films, but that type of horror does not, why do you exist? You don't need to. Human Centipede, see also. What's the point?
Oh, really?
Don't tell me. What?
I enjoy the Human Centipede. I think the first film is fantastic. Second and third, don't bother. But the first one, it's all right. Yeah. I thought, anyway.
It's that kind of like extreme, especially like in the case of a Serbian film, that's ridiculously extreme. And I just, no, like what, why does that exist? Obviously, it elicits a reaction in somebody, that's the point of a film, but no, hard pass.
Okay.
Bingo bango.
No, I respect that. 100%.
Yeah, it's a fair, I think that's the most understandable one that we've said so far, to be honest.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's like the communities around, like, extreme films.
Yeah.
Are very interesting because people will stand by them, but then it's kind of like a hard line. It's like you appreciate the entire genre and love every film in it, or you are completely repulsed, which is arguably what it's there for.
Just
to make people feel disgusting. But that's a fair shout.
Yeah. What's your final one?
Well, funny you should bring up Saw.
Is it better than that?
No. You speaking about Saw, and I did just glance over into my movie cabinet and saw my Saw trilogy on the side and remembered how much I despise Jigsaw, the film.
You do hate that film very much, don't you?
I have no problem with films saying the final chapter, right? Friday the 13th, fine, right? Yeah. I enjoyed that. But we had Saw the final chapter, okay? Fine. Yeah. Then we had Jigsaw. When I say that I didn't speak for 20 minutes after that film, just because I was trying to push down the rage of what had just happened, I mean it.
Yeah.
Like, I take pride in not being an angry person, like, ever. But that film, I felt it in my gut that I was mad. Yeah. Like, shoehorned comedy into horror, I despise. Like, really, really hate.
Yeah.
They tried to be funny with that film. Like, you have a token character who just says one-liners, and I'm like, no, you know?
Because horror comedy is an incredible genre.
100%.
And when it's done right, it's fantastic. Yep. But if it's done badly, it ruins both the comedy and the horror.
Exactly. So, I mean, the reason I kept watching the Saw films was, like, I enjoy the traps. They're fun.
Yeah.
Like, I'd argue up to number 3 was good for me.
Okay.
And then kind of after that, I just didn't care about the story anymore. And the one thing that I don't hear being spoken about a lot, why did the two main characters in like 4 and 5 look exactly the same?
I don't think I realized this until you said it. I don't know. Is it some kind of a cinematic choice?
I don't know, but I just found myself for the entire film after one incident that leaves one with a notable scar.
Mm.
I was just scouting for the scar on either person because I didn't know which one was which. Jigsaw tops my hatred for the rest of the films though. Like, that'll be my third, I think.
That's fair. Yeah. So that's a pretty interesting list of our least favourite films.
Isn't it?
Yeah. So I'm going to give you the choice. Do you want to make it miserable, happy, miserable, or get all the miserable out of the way first before we go on to our favourite films?
Shall we get all the miserable out of the way?
Heck yeah. First, we'll end on a happy note.
Yeah, well, for some people.
Well, we'll see.
Yeah.
So this one, I really struggled to nail down just 3, because we're going to talk about our least favourite tropes in cinema.
Mm.
And there is a lot that exists in cinema trope wise that makes me so angry and so frustrated.
Mm-hmm.
I might go off on a little bit of a rant.
Absolutely fine.
If you know me, nothing of the above will surprise you. So yeah.
Fantastic.
Do you want to go first?
Yeah, go on then. So as I said, horror is my primary genre. and watching a lot of things recently has made me once again realize how much I hate the trope of the virgin always lives.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Like, who back in the 70s, when slasher films started being things and doing bits, decided that let's just inadvertently shame people for having sex?
Yep.
Like, and then people play off it in the future, like in Scream, which is great. Mm-hmm. And they're just like, oh, well, shouldn't have had sex in the video store. That was it. That was me not done. Annoying. But like, yeah, I just think it's stupid from kind of a moral concept, which I'd be surprised if somebody tried to argue with me about that.
Oh, they'll find a way.
Yeah, looking forward to all the comments of people trying to fight me on this one.
This is it. Like, virginity is a social construct. It doesn't exist. It's not real. No one... Virgin dudes live and die, like, no one cares. But no, God forbid, if you're a girl who hasn't had sex. You know?
Yeah.
For real.
Exactly. I don't think there needs to be much more said on that, apart from the fact that it is stupid, once again.
That's a very valid trope to hate.
Yeah.
So my first one that I'm going to kick off with, mm-hmm. shocker, is... the classic cinematic trope of the manic pixie dream girl. She knows what's about to happen. It's a term coined by Nathan Rubin, basically about women that exist solely to further the character development of the men in their life. Usually quirky, usually eccentric, usually... The backstory behind this one of the films that didn't make it into my bottom three, because I know it's one of Rachel's favorite films, is Scott Pilgrim versus the World. We will have an episode on that. I hate it, whereas Rachel absolutely loves it. And the whole Ramona Flowers thing, you know, she is this kind of otherworldly, ethereal girl who somehow falls in love with a distinctly average man who does the bare minimum. And she just looks so angry at me right now. And it's that notion of they're literally created there to help the men and facilitate men's character growth without having any kind of agency themselves. To the point, Nathan Rabin, the guy who coined it, after in a review of Elizabeth Time, which is an average film, it's whatever, he actually retracted it in 2014 because he was like, it's become quite a sexist connotation. He was like, I was meant to, you know, I said it to kind of call out the fact that people need to write better women, but it got hurled at a lot of people. Zoe Deschanel's prime example.
Oh.
You know, so a lot of people were calling her a manic pixie dream girl, but not her character, like her as a person.
Oh.
So I think like it got kind of weaponized, if that is the right word to use. Sure. And he was like, I didn't want that to happen, just write women better. But it's like, I think it's a really pervasive trope and it's in a lot of stuff. And it's one of those things that once you become aware of it, you become incredibly cynical about it as well.
Sure. No, absolutely.
Yeah. So it's like, I hate it. And I will call it out whenever and wherever I can see it.
Sure. I respect that.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, that's fine.
Like, we're saving the Scott Pilgrim episode for like the finale because it's going to be explosive.
It will be a bloodbath or a coin bath, if you will.
Not even Brie Larson can save it.
Oh, Georgie.
It's got Aubrey Plaza, Anna Kendrick, and Brie Larson in that film. And I still don't like it.
That's saying something.
Right?
Yeah. If you follow Georgie on Instagram and have seen the copious amounts of Aubrey Plaza pictures.
I said what I said.
And still.
Still. Scott Pilgrim. What about you? What's your next?
So, besides horror, I watch a lot of LGBTQ+ films. Still yet to find some semi-decent ones, apart from the kind of main, well-spoken ones. But the trope that I put down first for my bottom, actually, was queer couples, but one of them's just cheating on a man.
Oh, kind of annoyed that I didn't think of that one myself to put on my list, because, yeah, that's horrible. Yeah.
Yeah, I had to narrow it down from, like, six different tropes that pretty much just kind of like link together and happen in the same film, but it's stupid.
It is.
That's my argument for everything, is that it's just stupid. Does it need to present queer people in the light of that they are actually just straight until they're not?
Yeah
but only one of them in a large portion of the films. Like, why can't people just be a bit more real in these films. Like, I know films are films, great, and they need to be entertaining, whatever, but it's happening too often for that to be the case.
Yeah.
With this trope, like, it just feels constant, and it's presenting queer people in a bad light.
Yeah, 100% agree.
So, yeah, it's stupid, and I hate it.
It presents queer relationships between women somehow still from a man's perspective. Like, yeah. Why is he involved? He doesn't need to be involved.
Just no.
You know what I mean? Like, why are you here?
No, yeah, exactly. Like, we could, I reckon between us, we could reel off at least 20.
Oh, yeah. Like, I'm thinking about it, and like, I was about to say, like, oh, fantastic, fantastic queer films. My first one that I think of is Portrait of a Lady on Fire, and that right. happens in that. You know, and obviously you went to see Ammonite, guess what happens, you know, it's in everything, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely.
Skinny white women in period costume are cheating on their men,
literally. Carol, what's cracking there? Like, gosh, nah,
that's a good one. That is a, it's not a good one, it's a good one to no. hate, you know.
Yeah, yeah. Secretly, that's Georgie's top trope.
No, I don't. I hate it. My next one is again, is one that if you know what I like, you'll understand why I hate it. Massive trope in sci-fi, the Born Sexy Yesterday concept.
Ooh, explain more.
Yeah, so basically it's films where this beautiful, beautiful woman is either created or appears out of nowhere, drops from the sky, and she's fully formed, oozes kind of sex appeal without knowing, but is so completely naive and has no concept of the world. And is super innocent to everything.
Right.
And of course, this makes men absolutely fall in love with her because it's this childlike innocence and naivety, but she's in the body of a woman, so it's acceptable to find her attractive.
Okay.
So you've got things like, it happens a lot in like, in sci-fi, like Star Trek, like, and Star Wars, I suppose, maybe not as much, but in a lot of situations like that, you've got like, stop kissing alien women when you save them. I don't know anything about your planet and your customs. They're all naive. Stop kissing them. That's not relevant. And you've got stuff, some really interesting examples, actually, are ones where this kind of innocence and naivety is presented. So they've got this, like, no concept of knowing what sexuality is. So like 80% of the time, they'll just start like undressing in front of the men and be like, oh, is this not okay? Like, okay. It's just an excuse for a woman to get a kit off in front of a guy. Have you seen the film Splash with Daryl Hannah as the mermaid?
No.
So she's a mermaid and she comes to live in New York with Tom Hanks. And she turns into like a woman. So she has legs. So she has legs. Yeah, the defining trait of woman, legs. And she doesn't get the concept of like nudity. So she just is walking around Central Park completely naked. And like men are like running up to her and taking their picture with her without her consent and stuff. In the film, it's meant to be like, ha 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 ha. But when you look at it, it's like, no. That's
not good.
That's bad.
Yeah.
And it's really frustrating to me because it is literally putting this childlike perspective and childlike worldview into the body. It's like an acceptable Lolita into the body of a full-grown woman.
Right, okay.
And I feel like it was just written for men who struggle with rejection from women who are their equals. And so search for acceptance in women who are not their equals in sexual capacities.
There it is.
There it is. You know, it's really bothersome to me because it is just like this infantilized version of a woman, but grown, you know?
Yeah. That's a good one. Yeah. Wow.
I feel the rage bubbling in me right now.
I do not blame you in the slightest.
What about, what's your third?
Okay, one that I didn't write down, but you're talking about sex and stuff in that last one. Someone is sad, right? Let's paint a picture. Someone is sad.
I'll change my last one then.
Oh no! I'm sorry.
No, it's valid.
Okay, right. Close your eyes for a second. If you're driving, don't close your eyes. But if you're not doing anything,
if you're sat in close a safe your eyes. Space, close yes. your eyes.
But we're not going to a safe space because this is a bad trope.
This is true, actually.
There are two people having a conversation. It's deep. It's emotional. There's a lot of things coming out. Maybe someone's crying. Maybe hysterically crying. Now, what's going through that other person's head? Maybe, oh, I'll go get them a cup of tea. No. Too boring in film. What am I gonna do? Maybe water their plants, take their mind off it. No, not that. I'm gonna make out with them until we fuck. That's gonna be what we're gonna do.
Did somebody say foreplay? Crying hysterically. Like,
pretty much. What is it? Like, that appears more frequently than I would care to admit.
Mm-hmm.
But why? Who thought that was a good thing to put in film?
Or in life?
Yeah, it's not promoting anything healthy. It's bad.
Yeah, it's really bad. And then they'll always pull away and they'll just carry on.
Yeah, that's like you're teasing me. No, it's because I'm crying. What's wrong with people?
Yeah, it's what? Why does that happen? That's not. If I'm upset, I don't want that.
No,
it's not romantic. It's weird.
Yeah, yeah, really. It's just uncomfortable to watch as well. Like, do I want to see snot pouring down somebody's face while they're like making out? It's getting everywhere.
Grim.
No, grim. I don't want to see that.
That's very fair.
Yeah.
It's hard. So my last one was a toss-up. Again, I just have too many. It was a toss-up between someone who is larger having to lose weight to become a respected, beautiful person.
Oh, interesting. That's right. Yeah.
Getting
with
him.
Wow.
But that one was pipped to the post by the concept of, similar to Manic Pixie Dream Girl, there's a lot of overlap actually in my three.
Sure.
It's the concept of a black person being in a film simply to facilitate a white person's needs.
Ooh.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. And it's one of those things that it's so, so frustrating. And it's frustrating for me as a white woman. Fuck knows how you must feel if you're not a white woman. You know?
Yeah.
I mean, a really, really recent example. You've seen The Queen's Gambit, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like, Jolene, incredible character. Really wanting to see more of her.
Yeah.
I'm not going to do too many spoilers, but she just disappears and then reappears at the most opportune time to solve everyone's problems.
Yep.
And it's really frustrating because, Jesus Christ, there's so many issues there. Like, holy hell. I mean, as with The Born Sexy Yesterday, there's so many like weird colonialist undertones to that concept. And it just makes me so uncomfortable and so frustrated.
Yeah.
Like, how about we just write films that have people in them? Let's just write good black characters and films for black people, about black people, and not weirdly just create these characters that are there to facilitate a white person's growth. No, it's bullshit. Stop it.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
It's like on that same vein, like just adding a black person in for comedy purposes.
Yeah. Like, what are you doing?
Yeah, exactly.
It shows because some... I won't name names, but like some directors and screenwriters, literally the way people are stereotyped, like not every black person needs to be, you can just be a regular person. Like the whole stereotypes that people give to people. People don't have to be sassy, just be regular. Like, you know?
Yeah.
And yeah, I think that it smacks of this kind of privilege of being like, oh, well, you can help me. So help me. You help the main character. And I hate it. I think it just boils my blood. Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. Oh, that was a good one.
Thank you.
It's okay.
Should we move on to happier climes?
I think we should.
So that was our least favourite films and our least favourite tropes in film. So hopefully that will give you kind of an overview of what we don't like, why we don't like it, and the things that we think should be subject to further critique in film.
Yes.
Yeah. So we'll move on now to what we do like, because that's also important, I think.
100%.
And it's nice to end on a happier note.
Yeah. We won't have that every episode.
Oh, no. Hell no. growth. So your top three films. And this is hard because I know that that's a difficult ask for anybody, and it will change depending on the day. But
yeah, 100%.
Top three films and why?
Do you want to go first?
Yeah. Okay. So, again, no surprise. My favourite film, and when you look at all my favourite films, it's very clear that I have a type, and it's like 80s and 90s. My number one favourite film of all time is Jurassic Park.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it's got everything for me. I think it's perfect. I think not only is it a really compelling film, really fun, But the way that the creation of that film completely changed cinema in terms of animatronics and filming is unreal. It's incredible the way that that film was able to create a dinosaur in 1993 that looks better than 80% of CGI dinosaurs now.
Yeah.
And like the animatronics behind that and the use of like physicality in acting and filmmaking compared to computer graphics. I think it's incredible. And I mean, Jeff Goldblum, no one can argue with that. Laura Dern, no one can argue with that. So it's, yeah, I love it. I have a Jurassic Park tattoo. My bestest friend got me like a first edition of the book. So like it's everything to me. I love it. Yeah.
Nice.
What's your number one?
I'm gonna bench Scott Pilgrim. I'm not gonna talk about it now.
You can talk about it, I don't mind.
No, we're gonna save it. It's gonna be a complete surprise for whatever episode we come into it with.
Okay.
Just know that it is my top comfort film of all time. That's all I'm gonna say right now. First top film.
I'm so sorry.
It's okay. It's not your fault. It is fine to have an opinion, even if it's wrong. No, I'm not that asshole. Don't worry.
She's not good.
Most of, I promise. Okay, there it is. Okay, so the top film that I put is Scream.
Yes.
Scream is phenomenal. The first film, Wes Craven did such a good film with redefining and creating the whole self-aware genre in 96? Go with 96. Yeah, I'd go as far as saying that it's perfect.
I would go as far as saying I agree with you.
Yeah. It's like I recently watched all four of them with my partner, and just seeing her reaction to them all was phenomenal.
Yeah.
Getting to rewatch them was great, and play the guessing game again. Like, who is the killer?
Yeah.
It's just so fun, and it's, like I say, it's self-aware. It's done in such a good way so that it's not boring. It changes genre every film. So I'm putting this as the whole franchise, but specifically the first film is my personal favourite. But like the first one, horror. Second one, it's a rom-com. Anyone who says that it doesn't bite me, like. Third one, comedy horror. Mainly comedy. Fourth one, why is Emma Roberts there? But we're brushing over that. It's fine.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So yeah, no, that film is phenomenal and I love it and I think I will always love it.
That's a really good choice. It's such a good film. Such a good film.
Yeah,
and like you said, it is, as for a horror film, it's perfect. Like,
yeah,
it has everything.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I'll go to a horror film then for my next in my top three.
Okay.
So my number two is, well, my nebulous number two. Sometimes it's two, sometimes it's, you know how it is.
Sure.
It's American Werewolf in London.
Yeah.
So, and again, you know, 80s film. Mm-hmm. Anything modern? No, thank you. I just think, again, it's one of those films, for me, it's a perfect horror comedy film.
Yeah, absolutely.
And unlike anything that we've discussed previously, it does nail the comedy and the horror elements, I think.
100%.
Again, kind of genre-defining in its use of makeup and prosthesis in that werewolf transformation sequence. Spoiler alert, there's a werewolf in it. and I just think it's a fantastic film. I love kind of my lycanthropes and my, you know, spooky creatures. But I just think it's done so well. And I will always stand by the fact that not enough films have sad endings. Everything's always happy. And I don't like that. So give me a sad ending in a film and it makes me happy. Okay. I'm very twisted by the sound. No, I just think it's great. I think it nails all the beats. I think I think it's a fantastic film. The cinematography, the acting. I love it. Yeah, it's been a favorite of mine for a very long time. So.
Yeah, hell yeah,
hell yeah. What's your number two?
So, A Ghost Story.
Okay.
I don't know. It holds a special place. Like anything that can talk about mortality and death in a way that is constructive and not kind of stupid, I will respect. But this film really tackles it in a way of a possible afterlife, which is interesting. I really enjoy concepts of afterlife, which is why I really like The Good Place, because that's a great series.
It's an incredible series.
So it talks about that, but it also shows visceral grief from one of the characters, which I think is super important, because how often outside of the A24 universe.
Yeah.
Do you see visceral grief in a way that is just extended scenes of pure torture?
Yeah.
Really? Like Hereditary, Midsommar.
Yeah.
They're, like, Midsommar's also on my list, but I don't think I'm going to talk about that one too deeply. But, like, the scenes of just people sobbing into the arms of another person. Like, in a ghost story, they don't have another person. It's just them dealing with grief on their own, which I think is really interesting. And then there's a whole party scene, which is really interesting, talking about life. I just really appreciate it. And it's really pretty, and it's filmed really well. And yeah.
Yeah.
That's a really good film. I really enjoy that one.
That's a really good choice. My number three, again, toss up, there's so many. Some that I can't mention yet. Some that I what I'll do for my final third one is I will pick one that explains why I hated one of the previous films we spoke about.
Okay.
So I'm gonna go for the original Blade Runner.
Okay.
One of my favourite films, incredible book, has the most special place in my heart. Which explains hopefully why I hated 2049. But I love that film. I love Harrison Ford. I love, again, the aesthetics of that film. I'm making it sound like I only like films that change cinematography, but the way they use like a static landscape and like some of the little toy ships for the intro sequence. And I know it's basic, but holy shit, give me like rainy neon and I'm happy. I love it. I love it. I love it. I love it.
Mm-hmm.
Again, Daryl Hannah's in this as well. Oh my god, it's all coming together. But I love it. I think it's an iconic film. It's a bastion of sci-fi.
Mm.
Again, there's a lot of characters that make some really dubious choices and do some really questionable things.
Mm.
But I think that it's one of those films, I think, that's just... It just is an icon of its genre.
Yeah.
Because another one, sneaking in, was The Crow. Icon of its genre. Adore that film. Questionable people doing questionable things, but it's such a beautiful film, Blade Runner. The book is fantastic if you haven't read it, and I love it. I had a little cat and her name was Pris, named after Pris the replicant in it, and she was beautiful. Aww. And I loved her, but I love it. It's a classic.
It's a good shout.
Yeah. And what's your number three?
So as I say, I had Midsommar written down, and they were the only three that I had written in the book, but The Strangers.
Nice. Okay, yeah.
That film is a lot.
Yeah.
Like, there are two genres in horror that really kind of make me do a little shake in my boots. one being zombies, dislike zombies, but love zombie films. And the other is home invasion, and that it still surprises me that I enjoy The Strangers so much. I think it's so cleverly shot.
Yeah.
And I think one of the most haunting scenes that I've seen in film for a very long time is just when Sackman head person just creeps into the back of the shot.
Yeah. Oh,
like,
it gives me the heebie-jeebies. Yeah. Yeah.
Right. Like, you don't need loud noise jump scares all the time.
Mm-hmm.
Or just like, that is a perfectly good jump scare. Like, I had it in my bottom tropes, like, I hate loud noise jump scares. And mm-hmm. I think there are a time and a place for them, but overuse is where, like, I draw the line at it. I think that's so tastefully done in its approach to horror and just people being in your house.
Yeah.
And the fact that they weren't too cocky either. I hate it when people take off their masks too soon, like, oh, I'm gonna kill you.
Yeah, yeah.
But you don't know that. Keep your mask on until I'm dead. Like,
that's it. Like, it's like in Hush, right? You know, when he's trying to get into a house and he's being all bragging. I'm like, dude, please simmer down. Like,
literally, yeah. Get rid of your god complex, get off your high horse, and put your mask back on.
Mm-hmm. It's good advice right now as well, guys.
Yeah,
like, keep your mask on.
Put your mask on. Do it. Otherwise, yeah. I'll just think you're a cocky serial killer.
It's a reasonable assumption.
Exactly. Also, keep yourself safe.
Yeah, that too. But. Mostly the serial killer thing.
Yeah, mainly.
Yeah.
But yeah, I'd say that's my top third film.
That's a really good choice.
Thank you.
Yeah. So that has been our bottom three, top three.
Yeah.
and I hope it's kind of given you a little bit of an insight into what we're about what we might be talking about. Obviously, we're going to deal with some classics. We're not always going to be completely negative, don't worry, because that wouldn't be fun. It'd be fun for us, but it wouldn't be fun for you to listen to.
No.
So we will try and keep it all lighthearted. I think it's just a really interesting way of looking at films in a way that is a little bit different. A lot of films are lauded for certain things. A lot of films have a lot overlooked in them. So hopefully we can kind of bring a discussion up about that. And I know that there's a few people out there that will agree with some of the stuff we've said. And I know that there is a lot of people out there who will disagree with what we've said. But it's all in the spirit of debate and conversation.
So. Yes. But also, if you disagree with us, we will physically fight you over the internet.
Oh, yeah, in a big way. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay, follow us on Twitter and Facebook and Instagram. We have everything.
We do.
So you can find us there, abuse us with questions. Yeah. And we might answer them.
We might, if you're lucky.
Yeah.
I'll put some links in the description of the episode for all of our social media, so you can follow us on there. And we will see you in our first proper full episode, where we will talk about a film. And I'll treat you. I'll tell you what it is. So the first film that we are going to be talking about on Coffee Breaks and Hot Takes is Fight Club, which I shouldn't really have told you, because that's the first rule.
And the second rule, and the third rule, and the fourth rule.
So,
are there any rules of Fight Club?
So I'm really excited to talk about this film. I think there's a lot to unpack with it. So we will be bringing that to you very soon. So thank you for listening. I've been Georgie.
I will still be Rachel.
Oh, nice. Uh-huh. Mine was ambiguous. Who knows who I'll be? Nicolas Cage is hosting the next episode.
Uh-oh.
I'd be so happy. But thank you for listening, and we will see you next time.
Bye.
Bye.